Welcome to the Title League podcast. I'm your host, Kurt, and I'm joined with my girl, Trish.
Hey, KB, how's it going today?
It's going really well. We've got a beautiful spring day here on the East Coast.
We do. It's absolutely beautiful out, and we have an amazing guest with us today.
For all our Canadian fans, you'll appreciate this one. Canadian gold medalist, WNBA All-Star, Kia Nurse. Welcome to the show, Kia. Thanks a lot for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Kia, let's start with how you've been keeping yourself busy outside of basketball since we've been in COVID-19 times.
Yeah, I'm pretty much like everybody else. I've just watched some Netflix. I read a lot of books right now. Been working out, you know, just at home doing some home workouts and then catching up with some family members.
And you're with your parents, you're with your family. You come from a pretty huge sports family in Canadian sports. Your brother actually is my cousin's favorite defenseman, is on one of his picks for fantasy teams every single year. So how is that? What has that been like? What kind of pressure comes from coming from a large sports family?
Yeah, it has its own, you know, pressures. It takes its own toll depending on how you look at it. I think the older that I've gotten, the less that I feel the pressure. And I think that's been great for me. Obviously, growing up, having people who have been through absolutely anything that I could have gone through already and having them only be a phone call away, that was something that was huge for me. Just when I was either struggling through something or I just felt like I needed to talk, you know, they always pick up the phone. They always tell me how they probably got through it, and it might not work for me, but at least hearing that someone came out on the other end of it all right makes me feel good most of the time. So it's been really, really fun. I think they're a really big reason why I've been successful and a big reason why I'm probably a little too competitive with everything in life.
Right. That's one of the downfalls. But it's so, you know, it's so nice to hear that you have that support and you have such a versatile sports family. So dad and uncle who were football players, your brother who's a hockey player. But what I think is the most fascinating is that you come from a long line of female basketball players, which must be very inspiring and very motivating for you.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was younger and, you know, my mother popped me out of the hospital, I feel like they took me right to the gym. They were both coaching my sister at the time, who's 9 years older than me. So I thought she was Michael Jordan. I didn't know any better. And, you know, from that point on, I was like, I would like to play basketball. This looks like fun. So it was really awesome to be a part of that and be a part of that lineage, but also I grew up in Hamilton Transway, which is the basketball program here, and it's an all-girls program. We don't have a men's side. So I think it's really, really amazing to kind of see that and see how it's grown. My mom was one of the originals who played on the team to now where it is. And that's probably a big reason why I thought, hey, women's basketball players are good at everything.
So you've been, you know, you just said it right out. Your mom took you to the gym and you've been playing ever since. So growing up, you know, who were some of the players that you looked up to? What were the players that were essentially your role models aside from your mom and your sister?
Yeah, what's interesting about me is that I don't really watch sports. I do now because my job kind of requires me to watch sports. But when I was growing up, I was like, I'll only watch the game if I know someone. So it was really just Philadelphia Eagles. That's all I really watched. But I would say at some point I saw Maya Moore on ESPN and I was like, oh, I want to be like her. So that was a big push for me to like want to go to UConn. It was a big push for me to want to play in the WNBA. And then obviously you got to give credit to Vince Carter because everybody knew who he was.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, we'll get to Canada basketball and how much it's evolved since you've been playing. But, you know, going to St. Thomas More, at what point did you start to realize that, you know, I'm not just playing basketball for my varsity team where I'm growing up playing basketball. When did you realize that this may be something more than just, you know, an extracurricular activity?
I would say I had to make the decision between soccer and basketball. So I grew up my whole life playing soccer in the summers and basketball in the winter. And in ninth grade, the summer of ninth grade, they told me that, well, my mom told me I had to pick one or the other because I wasn't really going to soccer practices at the time because I had Team Ontario stuff, but I was still playing the whole game. She told me that was unfair, I guess. So she's like, pick. And so I stuck with basketball. And at that point, I knew that my sister had gone over to the States and played there and she had a free education. And that was like my goal. I was like, cool, I'm just going to go play in the States and not have any student bills to pay later on. I didn't really think about WNBA probably until my senior year of college. Like when I was ending my career, I was like, oh, yeah, I could do this. So I think that's kind of where I felt like I was always playing to just get to the NCAA so that I could get an education for free.
Exactly. And, you know, building on that, if you look at Canadian sports specifically, you know, the greater Toronto area and Toronto athletes that have come through, going over to the U.S. and playing Division I basketball has always been something that, you know, we dreamed of as kids. You didn't just go and play Division I basketball. You went to UConn. Tell us a little bit about that entire recruitment process. How did you get there? And more importantly, Coach Oriyama, he's a Hall of Famer, greatest coach in women's sports. So tell us about the UConn experience and how did you end up getting there?
Yeah, so I started in Hamilton, obviously. It was kind of in the years that people started to leave to go to prep school in the States because they thought it gave them a better opportunity to get to a bigger school. So I remember asking my dad, and I was talking to somebody about this morning. I remember asking him, like, should I go to the States? Is that something that I'm supposed to be doing so that I can get to whatever school? And he was like, no, if you're good enough, they'll find you. And I was like, okay, cool. So I stayed here my entire high school career. I went through St. Thomas More all 4 years, and I played a couple tournaments a year over in the States during the summer during the AAU circuits, just with my transfer team. So we just got together and went over there and played. I had closed down my recruiting process literally maybe like a month or two before I was going to sign. My mom wanted me to sign in the early period in November. And I was cool with where I was. I had my three that I was going to pick from. And then all of a sudden, my dad called me when I was in China with the national team. And he was like, hey, your friends are playing one more tournament in Washington. Do you want to go? And I was like my friend's friends? And he's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, sure. So I met them in Washington, and we played one more tournament, and we destroyed everybody that was in our path, which was so much fun. And we ended up going home, and then all these new schools started calling me. And it was like UConn, Kentucky, Tennessee, like all the big schools. And I was like, so I guess I have to reopen all this that I just finished. And so I did. The recruiting process came through, and you know, I talked to them. And at that point, I got down to three again. And I remember thinking to myself, if UConn goes and wins all these championships and I know I could have gone there, I'm going to be really pissed off. So I ended up at UConn, and it was probably the best decision that I made, being there, being able to be coached by Coach Oriyama. Like you said, you know, he has a way of being able to get the best out of you. And it's not always the prettiest or the nicest way of doing it, but it's the most effective. And I think he will find something that you're doing wrong, and he will harp on it for weeks until you do it right. There's just something as simple as make that pass with your left hand. And until you can do it and make an effective pass with your left hand, he will remind you that you can't do it. And you get so angry that you take it as a challenge, and you're like, watch me do it. So then I go do it, and he's like, good job, but you didn't do this right. So he finds something new to nitpick you on. And that's why I think he's so great at what he does, because he won't let you settle for just being average. He wants you to be more than what you think or what you know you can be. He'll push you to be more than that. And he knows how each player's buttons push. He knows how to make you tick. He knows how to challenge you to get you to play better. And that was 4 years of that. And now I am where I am. So I guess he did a good job.
Wow.
There's a bit of an urban legend around you that maybe you can clear up. There is a saying, or there is a thought out there that when you were in grade 9, you had put out an intention that you were going to go to UConn, that was your goal.
It was after I saw Maya Moore, and then I was like, oh, this team wins a lot. Because obviously we didn't see women's basketball in Canada. It wasn't on television. So in my head, I'm thinking, all I want to do is make it to the NCAA tournament and play 1 year. That was my goal when I went into the recruiting process. Like, not 1 year, sorry, play one game in the NCAA tournament. I don't care if we win it or not. I just want to be able to say I played in March Madness. And from that point, I had set out that I wanted to go to UConn. But in my head, I was like, this is never happening. And I knew that. Like, I was like, you know what? There's no way I'm getting to a big school. Let me just settle for this one March Madness game and I'll be happy. So when that came, I remember him calling me Coach Oriyama. And I remember my mom saying, like, UConn's on the phone. And I was like, did they call the right house? Like, are you sure? She was like, no, they said your name. And I was like, all right, I guess. Like, I didn't believe it. I thought they just got it wrong. But it worked out.
Oh yeah, I'd say it worked out. And you know, it's interesting because really it hasn't been that long and already the stage of female basketball in Canada has grown so much, and that's been such a large part thanks to you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. As a woman in sports, how do you make sure that your voice is heard? How do you make sure that you have as big of a stage as the guys that are doing the same job as you?
That's difficult. Obviously, I think, you know, I have a unique perspective in it because my brother's a professional athlete, and being able to see what he does and how he's perceived versus obviously what I do and how I'm perceived. I think I've always been really fortunate to be, you know, raised by some tough women who were not going to back down at anything. And my mom and my sister are both ladies who are fearless in what they have to say. They say their opinion, they say it loud, and they'll let you know about it. And I think that was something that I learned from both of them, and just being able to understand that if I have a platform, then I can use it. And I think that my platform really came through in, I think it was 2015, when we won that Pan Am gold medal on Canadian soil. That was kind of the welcome to the stage party for me that I didn't know was happening. So at that point, my mom and dad were like, okay, well, you understand that there's a lot of people who are watching on social media. And we always had social media rules growing up about what we should and shouldn't post. And, you know, they said, now you're considered a role model. And I got that question a lot from that point on, like, how do you handle that? How do you understand it? I'm like, well, it's a challenge because I'm a kid too. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to do kid things. So I learned that Snapchat is where I can live my best life and Instagram and Twitter are where the public can see me. But just being able to understand that role and understand that there's a platform now. So use it, but use it to the best of your ability and use it in a way that's clear and concise. And I think that's where I've learned to have a voice and to say things that, you know, others might not say. And I do it through a lot of different programmings that I work with. I do it through my own AAU program. Find a way to get connected with these young female athletes and give them a voice through me if they want to help, if they want anything that they need to understand a little bit better. Just being able to help them understand there is a platform for them.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you're young. So your platform right now is just starting and it is basketball focused and encouraging young female athletes and making sure that they know that there are paths available for them. But have you started to branch out at all? Are there any social issues that have become important to you that you want to continue to use your platform, your voice for?
There's a couple that I'm looking into, obviously. You know, it's interesting for me because I live in essentially three different countries, but, you know, mainly two different countries that, you know, differ in so many ways on so many different issues. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that I do have opinions on and that I do want to talk about. So yeah, I use it for different things.
I think recently, maybe I think I read this, that you had donated, I'm going to get this wrong, but you donated money based on how many points you got for the fires in Australia. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So already there you go. You have a different social justice issue or a social conscious issue that you're using your platform for. How much money was raised from that?
Yeah, we did $5 for every point that we scored over five games. I had three people match it, and I think we got to $2,500 a person. And then we had other people come in and donate on their own to the Red Cross. It was just easy because I feel like I wasn't in the fires necessarily. Where I lived in Australia, the fires were burning around us. So I was in the area that had all the hazardous smoke, and we couldn't go outside and whatnot. And I feel like it was happening for months in Australia. And because I was there, obviously I knew about it, but nobody was talking about it anywhere in North America. So I was like, this is a problem. Like, my parents were, because I was so told them I'd probably have to come home at some point. But I felt like because I had the platform that I do in terms of my Canadian audience and my American audience, once I put something out there about it, then we could inform a couple other people about it. And obviously we had a lot of donations come through. So that was amazing.
Well, most definitely you were one of the first Canadian stars to bring awareness to the fires on our stage. So that was pretty remarkable.
Thank you.
And Kia, just building on that, you know, you touched on your brother earlier, so you get a different perspective and you get his perspective on being a male athlete and you being a female athlete. Being a female athlete in the basketball world is a lot different than being a male athlete in the basketball world. You just said, you know, spending time in Australia, you're coming off a MVP championship season. It's great, but you have to work two jobs. You have to work one in America and you have to work one in Australia. Tell us a little bit about what that's like, how to juggle it, and then maybe just lead into now the WNBA's new CBA and how that may change things moving forward.
Yeah, I would say, you know, obviously for us, it's a bit of a grind. You're playing year round for some of us. Fortunately, we're able to add in another season with our national team stuff and whatever that requires us to do for that summer. And I think what's really interesting about it is that, you know, we get to experience different cultures. We get to travel the world doing something that we love as a job. But at the same time, we miss out on a lot of stuff. I wasn't home for Christmas the last 2 years. You know, my grandfather was sick. So there's the worry in the back of my head that if he passes away and I'm gone, can I make it home? You know, so there was a lot of different issues that I know that I faced that I'm sure, you know, other people in my position have faced in a different extent. So that's always tough. I think what is really good about this new CBA that we came forward is obviously it's a landmark deal. It's something that's never been done before. And it gives us a great opportunity to possibly get out of where we are right now in terms of having to play overseas and having to play in the WNBA as well. You know, right now, I think as the years go on, that will become more of an option for the younger players and for players on their rookie contracts like myself. Playing overseas or having another job is still more lucrative for us. For veteran players at this point, I mean, the way that we increased the pay there was absolutely incredible. So they don't technically have to go overseas anymore, which is great because obviously our vets who helped turn this league into what it is today, you know, it's great for their bodies as well. Across the board, I think we did an amazing job of improving just the standard of living for us, the ability to have no roommates on the road, our travel capacity, food, health insurance, all that stuff. I think we completely got it right there and making sure that everybody's going to be okay. So I think as the years go on, eventually every player in the league, especially even if you're a rookie, can come in and probably have a livable wage where they don't have to do something else.
Exactly. And just constantly, you know, the ladies that have come before moving the game forward, and now it will eventually become part of your role to move it forward for the generations to come, which is, you know, it's very exciting and just to see the overall growth. Recently, Absolutely. You signed with Jordan Brand. I'd love to hear a little bit about that. What was that like for you? Did it catch you off guard? Were you expecting it? And did you get a chance to actually spend any time with the Jordan family?
It completely caught me off guard. I had no idea it was coming. I was very, you know, happy in my Nike contract. I was sitting here and then I got a call from one of my Nike friends and they were like, are you sitting down? And that concerned me. So no one ever asked me if I'm sitting down. So they said, well, here's an opportunity. You know, Jordan Brand, they're very specific in who they signed Jordan Brand. So that was a really big shock to me that the opportunity was presented to me. So I thought that was incredible, but it's been so much fun to be a part of. You know, I think obviously I looked up to Maya Moore. So it's amazing to be a part of a brand that, you know, she was a trailblazer in for us on the women's side. They're extremely close-knit. Like, it's very much a family when we talk about being a family because there aren't very many of us athletes. You know, they're pretty exclusive in who they pick. So I think that has been really, really awesome to be a part of. You know, I got to be in Russell Westbrook's commercial for his Why Nots because I wore them. Literally, I was wearing them in games and I was posting them on my Instagram. He responded. And I was like, whoa. And then I got this like really cool setup for All-Star where they made me this crazy box. And I had these shoes that Russ had worn and nobody had worn them other than him. And so it was like really crazy what I was doing. And to be able to be a part of that, I met Michael Jordan. So to be able to have met him and, you know, he said my name to my face. I was like, oh my God, he knows my name. You know, that stuff has been really fun to be a part of. And it doesn't hurt that you get like every single pair of shoes.
Wow. And, you know, just you said when you were growing up, you didn't really watch a lot of sports. I'm sure you're watching The Last Dance now. And it must be pretty surreal, not just for you. I mean, for all of us, it just reminds us that MJ is the GOAT. And now you're signed to that family.
Yeah, I don't understand why there's even a debate anymore. I feel like now that you've watched this, you should just be like, yep, GOAT. I think just the way that he handled himself, the way that he could get the best out of somebody, and at all costs, he was trying to win. Like, if you want to win at something in life, you got to do that. But he actually, like, had the guts to do it day in and day out. And I think that was something that was incredible. But just to think about now, like, being a part of his brand and seeing why it is the way that it is, and being able to carry that on. There's a legacy that he left on the court and what he did for the game of basketball. And now they're using his brand and obviously his shoes and whatnot to continue that legacy and continue to grow basketball. So I think they're doing an incredible job. I think we're really lucky to be a part of it. There's a whole new women's collection out right now, and that's like my favorite thing on the planet. And they let me debut the 34s on court. So I got to be the first basketball player to ever wear those. So I mean, a woman's basketball player did that in WNBA, and that to me was just surreal.
Jordan himself, though, was such a forward thinker even then. I think that's kind of, I always knew what a phenomenal basketball player he was, but watching this documentary, I remember, I think it was first episode, where it said that they had cameras following them during that 97-98 season and just recording everything. Like, that's way before there was anything. I don't even know if there was MSN Messenger in 97-98.
Yeah.
Like, this was such forward thinking that it shows his greatness extended far beyond the basketball court. And I feel like every episode that we watch, I know that it's going to come to an end, and I don't want it to come to an end, because it's just, I want more, I want more. And I wonder if there's anybody that you think today, so not in comparison, not who's the greatest of all time, but from that perspective of being forward thinking, which player in NBA or WNBA do you think would be a comparison to him?
Well, I'll give you WNBA, I think, in terms of forward thinking, it would probably be Diana or Sue. I think they've always kind of been like that, and they've been huge trailblazers for our league and where we are now. And I think I've always kind of looked at them like they know what they're doing on the court, but they know what they're doing off the court and when it ends, and you know, setting themselves up in that sense. On the men's side, I would say it was Kobe. Like, Kobe was the one who, you know, he had what he had with his businesses and Kobe Incorporated as well. But he had his hand in a little bit of everything. And I know there's footage of him also from one of his last seasons. I know they haven't decided what they're going to do with that from what I don't know all this. I'm reading it on Twitter. But I think, you know, my mom talks about it all the time when we watch the documentary, like, she sees so many similarities in Kobe and Michael's mindset. And Michael said on his own that Kobe would be the only one that could possibly beat him because he steals all his moves. You know, I see that, and what he was trying to do for women's basketball and for Gigi, and for us to move forward. Like, I think that was something that was beyond forward thinking. Like, he wanted to bring attention to our game because he respected it, and he knew, and he looked at it for what it was, as basketball. And I think that was something that for me, I was like, yeah, that would be Kobe.
Exactly. And RIP Kobe, and just the entire family, our thoughts go to them. You know, we think about it every single day. It's crazy to think that he's not here anymore. I was listening to, you know, Coach Auriemma's speech at the memorial at Staples Center. And, you know, he talks about Gigi being a Husky at heart. I get chills thinking about it. And obviously you're a part of that family, so you understand how together and the sisterhood there. So it is sad. And we look forward to seeing some footage that comes out, but definitely, I think that's the closest you can compare MJ to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And everything Coach Auriemma said and everything you heard that day about Kobe as a dad, and just like, they would come into the locker room and he would stand in the back and then just be Gigi, and all the attention would be on her. And it was so awesome to see that and be a part of that, and how much they loved the Huskies. She definitely would have been a UConn player, and she would have sent us 4 national championships without a doubt.
Damn right. So, last year, Raptors win the championship. Huge moment, not just for Toronto, but for Canadians as a whole, to see how far, you know, this country has come. Tell us, where were you during the championship run and some of your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I was in New York getting ready for my season. And I was on the road for a couple of the games. And then I was at home, like, legitimately in my New York apartment living room watching the finals. It was crazy, to be honest. Like, I grew up watching the Raptors and knowing about them and going to games, but I don't know if I ever really thought like, oh, we're going to win a championship. Maybe because I always hear everybody talking so much trash about the Raptors. So they're the only team in Canada. But what I really thought was amazing about it was that none of my friends in the States really understood that it was an entire country that was backing them instead of just one part of their country or a state. So I thought that was really cool to me. I thought it was funny because everybody afterwards sent me like congratulation texts, like I had done something, and I was like, "Thanks, guys." Like,
yeah, you're associated.
Like, congrats on the championship. I'm like, "Yeah, that's fine, because I'm Canadian, huh?" And they're like, "Yeah." So, I mean, it was awesome to see that and to be a part of it, you know, from afar. But I feel like everybody now, that's one of those moments like all Canadians are gonna be like, "Well, you know where I was when the Raptors won the championship."
Yeah.
Exactly. So, Tokyo next year. What are some of the expectations and what should we expect for next year's gold medal run?
Yeah, obviously, I think for us on the women's side, we've been, you know, pushing forward from years. For like a couple of years, we've been really on the rise. We're sitting at fourth right now in the world, which is our highest ranking to date.
Congrats.
And I think, thank you. And I think we're riding a really big wave of momentum right now. Like we were really good in Belgium when we qualified earlier this year. To be able to have done that the way that we did it, you know, win three games in a row against really good teams, that was really fun to be a part of. So I think we were like, okay, bring on the Olympics next, like we rolling. And then all of a sudden it was like, no. So I think an extra year is going to be great for us in terms of preparation. It gives us a year to get better individually and as a team. But we're really headed towards the podium. That's our goal, is to get on there. I think we had an opportunity in the last Olympics, and I think we're coming back with stronger, smarter, better than what we were then. So yeah, we're looking forward to doing something real special.
You guys are going to bring it home. I have full faith. We just need to make sure that we have the opportunity to have an Olympics. We need to get that. Yes. We need to get to that point.
Yes.
Kia, I have a few questions, a few final questions for you. You talked about the influence that Maya Moore had on your life, your mom, your sister. Who would you say has had the greatest influence?
Oh, God. It's going to set me up for failure. Someone's going to call me like, you didn't say me. I would say it would probably be my sister or my brother, but I'm going to go with my sister in this case because I feel like she was everything that I wanted to be, and she showed me everything that I could be. You know, I was like that super annoying little sister who just wanted to hang out and play. And she was like, Kia, go away, like every day. And she says now she likes me, but I'm not sure if I believe that. But I honestly think like I saw her playing basketball and I was like, I want to do that. I saw her go to college in the States. I want to do that. You know, just being able to look at her and see who she is as a person, who she is as a player, that was a huge influence on me and wanting to really pursue basketball.
I think that's a good answer. I don't think anybody's going to get mad at you. I mean, maybe your mom, but it's okay.
I love her. If you're listening, I love you, Mom.
you talked about Snapchat, Kia, and then Instagram and Twitter, Kia. Overall, how do you want people to see you?
Obviously, I'm going to put my best foot forward. I feel like everybody does that in this day and age. But I want to leave a legacy of, you know, someone who went and did something that people thought they couldn't do and, you know, do it in, I did it as, like the simplest way I could. I stayed home. I was with my family the whole time. And then I just went to the States and tried to make something out of nothing. And, you know, that worked for me. So I really want them or anybody who sees me or sees my legacy to see you can do a lot of stuff that doesn't look like you can. Like you're going to see a bunch of people on TV, a bunch of people on Instagram, social media, whatever it is. And sometimes they're like close to you because it's on your phone or on your TV, but it's so far away because you don't really understand that they're just like you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something I'm fun loving. Like I love to have fun. I love to be loud, dance, do all the quirky things that people do. And sometimes I feel like the silly side of me comes out all the time and that's okay. And I want people to know that that's okay. Like, be yourself, even if it's crazy. Because my parents tell me I'm crazy all the time, but I just go with it. And then just be able to give back to the people who, you know, gave you so much. I think basketball opens up a lot of doors into whatever it is you want to do, whether it be sport or not sport. And playing sports in general opens up a lot of doors to understanding yourself and understanding accountability and confidence and different life skills that you can get. So I want people to keep playing, whether that's like legitimately rep or if it's just outside on the court with your friends, that kind of stuff.
I love that. And quickly, just on the Kia Nurse Basketball Academy, are we going to get a cross-country tour? We've got a huge women's program out here in Nova Scotia. And they're always itching. You know, we had a Ball is Life event that we brought last year, and it was only for the guys, and we got a lot of feedback. So when can we get Kia Nurse out here to run a program?
We need you here, Kia. We got a lot of girl ballers that'd love to see you.
We're working on it. We obviously have Kia Nurse Elite AAU that runs out of Ontario, but we bring in people from all over the country for that. So we created Kia Nurse Basketball Academy because obviously Kia Nurse Elite has certain age groups. So this one just kind of lets everybody in. And I think what'll be really interesting is we had it going here in Ontario. We were doing our test drives this year, and then obviously COVID happened, so that unfortunately wasn't helpful. But our plan is to go countrywide and do a bunch of different clinics and obviously meet a bunch of different faces. So I've got a little bit of extra time on my hands coming up in the next off season, so it should be all right.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll remind you of that, and just want to send a quick happy birthday to a fellow maybe Team Canada teammate that you've played with from out here in Denisha Provo.
Yeah, happy birthday, Denisha.
Kia, what do you think life after basketball is going to look like for you?
Hopefully a lot of good eating. I'm going to get off this healthy diet, I think. It'll be a lot of, I think, trying to stay within the sport, because I've just found so much happiness and so many people that I love in the sport that I want to keep giving back. It might be in the face of broadcasting. I do some analyst stuff now with TSN, so that's been a lot of fun, and it's been great for me to kind of see the game from a different angle. I'm actually learning a lot for my game now, but I thoroughly enjoy that, and then there'll be lots of stuff around. You know, hopefully I'm in Canada when I grow up. I'm 24. When I get older. hopefully I'm still around here. But, you know, we'll see where life takes us. There'll be lots of basketball, though. Just not playing it and dying every day from it.
Right. But it's going to be there. It's going to stay in your life.
Yeah.
Okay, so some easy, fun questions to finish us off. I don't want you to think too hard. So the first answer that comes to your mind.
Okay.
All right. If you were to write your biography today, what would you call it?
Story of a baller, I guess. The Keener story. Story of a baller.
Perfect. Who would play you in a movie?
People tell me I look like Paula Patton. And by people, I mean like probably two people. But I have heard that before. So maybe her. But if I'm really going just so that I can hang out with somebody, it's definitely Beyonce.
Yeah. It's your choice. It's not what people say. It's who you want to play.
Yeah, true.
And what TV show is most like your life?
Have you guys seen Black AF?
Black AF?
It's on Netflix. It's from the like Blackish mixed-ish.
Yeah.
If you watch that, like he's literally my father. Like I it's so funny.
definitely gonna watch it.
It's a must watch.
I love Blackish. I didn't know that they had Netflix.
Yeah, it's the same writer.
Okay, awesome.
And it's about his life, and he's the actor. It's quite interesting.
That's great. Oh, Kia, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. You taking the time, and really excited to see how you grow in the future.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you guys calling. I hope you guys stay safe. Your loved ones are safe and well during these difficult times. So hopefully it'll be over soon.
We hope so too. And we'll let you get out to your workout now. But again, thanks so much.
No worries. Thank you.